Hello and welcome back to another episode of the HRER podcast, where we delve into the world of HR emergencies and scandals. Don't forget to follow and subscribe to HRER on your favourite podcast platform.
Get ready for scandalous stories, lessons learned, and a generous dose of advice for HR professionals for navigating the HR landscape.
Our goal here is not just to entertain, but also to help you learn from the topics we touch on in order to save your business from its own emergency.
In the real world, in the normal world, tracking someone's time every 15 minutes feels excessive. I've always said to people, you know, when you've got someone in a formal meeting, the safest thing to do is assume that they're recording it.
I don't know, it's a bit alien to me, but you've been there, haven't you?
I've had to soften to come into the tech industry. I really have. How many roles and how many sort of output requirements really require us to answer that quickly?
A friend of mine.
No, this can't be a thing. Just before we start, protect your business from the risk of tribunal, reduce legal costs, and save yourself from HR headaches with our Heroes software and employment law consultancy services.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to HRER. We've not been here for, we're every 2 weeks, aren't we? It is every 2 weeks. Most people do every 1 week.
Yeah, we got kind of thrown off kilter a little bit, didn't we? Because I was indisposed in the hospital and recovering for a bit. But we're all good.
We're going to discuss some sort of time-based issues today, people that are being over-monitored, perhaps. I can't imagine what that would be like.
It's not something you experience.
It's actually not, no. I'm not even being sarcastic. I am very much left to, as you should be, like, trusted, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But this person wasn't. So, the title is Tracking Every 15 Minutes. Is this really legal? We're going to find out. Hi, Alyssa. I'm looking for some professional perspectives on a situation that has recently been brought to my attention since recently joining the company. One of our managers has introduced a requirement for an employee to complete a daily Excel log detailing their activities in 15-minute increments throughout the workday. According to the manager, the purpose is to improve visibility into the employee's workload and productivity. We've got some context as well. The employee has been with the company for approximately 2 years. Their performance reviews have been consistently positive. There have been no documented performance concerns or disciplinary issues. At this time, the employee appears to be the only individual in the department being asked to complete this activity of this activity tracking. The employee has expressed concerns that the request feels like micromanagement and have now threatened to take action. How on earth do I deal with this one? Well,
we're going to find out.
We're going to find out.
That's kind of what we do on the pod.
The initial reaction is I would probably be a bit miffed if I was this employee.
In the real world, in the normal world, tracking someone's time every 15 minutes feels excessive. In the world that I came from, so a traditional law firm, they track time in 6-minute increments.
Okay.
So lawyers can generally tell you in any block of 6 minutes of a day what it is that they have been doing. So, and it's the same in other professional services. So I think accountants, probably similar sorts of things. However, we're not doing it on an Excel spreadsheet. There's now software. I mean, even back when I was doing this, there was software in place to track time. Were I reading this back in a law firm, I'd be like, what's the problem? You know, that would be normal. My day to day. And I've got some sort of great anecdotes I'm going to tell you about sort of what that experience is like day to day. But in the real world where we've got an employee who's being asked to do this, nobody else in the workforce is. And let's face it, if you're doing something like this on an Excel spreadsheet these days, you're going to spend half your day completing your time entry rather than actually doing what we're supposed to be doing. So on the face of it, this sounds excessive. It does sound like micromanagement, but let's dive into some of the queries and see where we go with this. I mean, what's your first impression? If I asked you to tell me in 15-minute increments of the day what you were doing.
Really?
What would your reaction be?
Really? Like, I don't think...
Would you suddenly get a lot busier?
Yeah, I would. Yeah, I think most of my day would be spent doing that. Yeah. But like you said there, if you're at a law firm, I imagine you're doing every 6 minutes, you're working on a different aspect and you're billed by question or
email. So we're billing. So everything that we're doing is billing, essentially. So your time as a lawyer is split between billing time and non-chargeable.
So
chargeable time, non-chargeable time. Non-chargeable time is things like making a cup of tea, going to the bathroom. It might be that you do a bit of pro bono work, or perhaps there's something that you need to check on a file. There might be some admin that actually is something you cannot charge to the client.
Okay.
But the culture is very much if you think remotely it could be chargeable and there's any benefit to the client or the work for what you're doing, you should be charging them for it. So a lawyer's hour is split into 10 little blocks of time. Each block is 6 minutes. So if you email me and it takes me 2 minutes to read that email,
yeah,
I'm charging you for 6 minutes because it's one unit. The minimum unit is one.
Right, okay.
So it's something I used to say to people in practice is when you get, particularly when I used to act for individuals, is who can be a little bit more needy, don't email me 10 times in a day.
I remember you saying this in the
office. With one-line emails, yeah, because I have to charge you 10 times.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Save it all inside, get to the end of the day, send me one email, because otherwise your bill is going to be so much more inflated.
I remember you saying that in the office a few months ago.
Yeah. So when it comes to tracking your time, you are expected to be able to account for where pretty much every minute of your day has gone. Mm-hmm. So again, back when I was in a large corporate firm, the tracking software at the time, you could set up little grids on your desktop or laptop. So you could do it by client and then by activity. So I might have like Joe Blogs drafting, Joe Blogs email reading, Joe Blogs mm-hmm. Advising client, so that then you could literally just click on it and it would start a timer for that. And then if I needed to go to the bathroom, I'd have non-chargeable bathroom break, click bathroom. So whenever you change your activity, you click on your preset tiles and you can customize them at any point. And at the end of the day, it produces your timesheet.
What's the point? Is it so you are charging the right rate?
It's one, so that you're charging the right rate, but two, when there is pressure on billing, productivity, and target hitting,
yeah,
it means that you can absolutely track to the minutia what someone is doing in a day.
Right.
So for example, and this is totally true. There was a large firm that worked out when people were making a cup of tea,
right,
that the time it took for the kettle to boil meant that people were taking like 4 minutes, 5 minutes to make a cup of tea. So they put boiling taps in. And that saved a couple of minutes. So say you've got 100 lawyers.
Yeah.
You're saving each one, because we're British, we drink so much tea.
Yes,
you're saving 2 minutes five times a day across 100 lawyers over the course of a year. What that stacks up to on someone who's charging £400 or £500 an hour to a client, it's a lot of lost fees.
It is.
When they could be doing chargeable work. So it's ways of getting more out of, out of your list, but looking at different ways of making these time efficiencies. Somewhere I worked brought in, and this was fascinating at the time, now it wouldn't be such a big deal on the tech side, but based on what you were doing, if you'd forgotten to click the right tile to say, you know, I'm working on company, but you're sending emails and you're on the phone, the software would work out who you were speaking to, what your activity was, and how much time it took you, and log the time for you.
Right, okay.
And this software reckoned that it could, across a large law firm, add £1 million of collective fees through what they consider to be lost time. So dragging up all those lost minutes that perhaps weren't being recorded.
Wow.
So yeah, legal field, this isn't new. This is absolutely been, this is decades old.
Yeah, I don't know, it's a bit alien to me, but you've been there, haven't you?
I've had to soften to come into the tech industry. I really have.
Yeah, it's a different world. And I've never had to. To me, it's, in my head, it's like warehouse things. That's the only time management concept I've really, or experience I've got. Like clocking in and out of jobs in a warehouse or different timesheets and stuff.
Yeah.
But it's a bit, that's different. Like clocking, like accounting for 6 minutes is.
Yeah. But then when we think about what else is out there in our industry, you know, there is an increase in things like tracking softwares, tracking devices, where you can tell at any moment in a day where an employee is and sometimes what they're doing. It's not a new concept. I'd say here, it's the thing that bugs me the most, and this is ridiculous, that from an efficiency perspective, we're asking this employee to do it in Excel.
I'd say
that's what bothers me the most here, rather than the micromanagement.
The red flag there is like, I don't know, it just doesn't seem like I've thought about like how they want the employee to record it, does it? It just seems a bit half.
Rather than the fact that we're actually asking them to do it. It's, it's like, I'm sorry.
Just do it better. Like, make them record it properly.
That would be the subject of my grievance. Yes. Being asked to put this into Excel rather than
rightfully
a more efficient
so.
Way.
Efficiency is the issue here. Let's go from some questions to ask from a HR perspective, shall we? We've talked a bit there, but is this level of monitoring proportionate and justified where the employee has a strong performance history and no documented performance concerns?
So in this situation, I'd be saying, well, if there's no performance issues with this employee, why are we so bothered about what they are doing in 15-minute increments? If their output is acceptable, if the quality of their work is acceptable, why is this measure being put in place? If this is a pilot for something that we're going to roll out across the workforce, or say we've got general productivity issues across the company, and actually this is a great performing employee, so we can see what good looks like.
That's what I was thinking.
You know, that we're going to model this. The employee first. You don't pick on someone in an instance like this. You know, you want to say, look, you are our absolute star of the show here. We want to try and make everybody as productive as you without getting you bullied and everybody hating you because we're putting you on a pedestal. Let's be mindful of that. We think your output's great. We think your performance is brilliant. We'd like to model your day and reproduce it.
We'll
bring the employee in on that. We don't micromanage a high-performing employee purely for something like this. This does not sound like a pilot. This sounds like somebody being picked on, particularly because the employee's threatening to take action. So that the communication for the reasons doesn't sound like it's there.
Sour management, perhaps. That's the only thing I can think of, but you never know. Inverse favouritism, whatever that might be.
For me, it's if the concerns are there, if, you know, HR doesn't understand it because appraisals are good, you know, we're not seeing anything negative in the paperwork, and the employee doesn't understand why this is happening. We've had a breakdown of communication somewhere. To bring an initiative like this, that line manager, whoever's implemented this, should at the very least have been explaining why this is happening. The days of, well, you will do it because I'm senior to you, therefore I don't have to explain myself, are gone. We don't work in that sort of world anymore. You know, we employ human beings and adults, mostly. People behave like adults most of the time. And if we're adding to their day, if we are putting them under the microscope to this extent, they deserve to know why. From a trust and confidence perspective, it's the absolute heart of the employment relationship.
It is. Let's say, hypothetically as well, this person does not work on a computer and they work like with handsy stuff.
That's even worse.
Every 15 minutes, like, just whatever, however they do it, like on their phone. Mm-hmm. Excel on your phone is terrible.
And we're back to the issue with this being on Excel again.
That is, I think that is the sticking point.
Yeah.
If, like you say, there was a nice little, little grid, just click on that, I've done this, bang, drop down, save, done.
Yeah.
If that was it, I wouldn't have much of a problem with it. Every 15 minutes, it's a bit harsh still. Yeah.
Though I did go, I mean, for me, from a culture shock perspective, I went from very, very large firm to a small regional practice. And at the time I joined, I think they were either between systems or they hadn't yet brought in the time software. So they had a piece of paper. So you'd when you went in the morning, you'd pick up a piece of paper that had a grid for the whole day on. And you had to, so you'd write your client names down and you're non-chargeable. And then you'd just tick, like, for which 6 minute increment of the day you'd done so you had to do it manually
every day
every day. So I think that was only in place for a few months before the time they brought in the software. But yeah, to go from somewhere where you had, you know, the time dragging software that would identify who you were speaking to then having to do it manually, it was, yeah, that was quite
how long ago was that roughly? We're talking like
so
10-15 years, surely.
Yeah, we are. So I was at that firm for 10 years. I've been gone for 5 years. That was 10 years.
Yeah. That's not even like that. That is a fully acceptable technological era to be working in.
Yeah.
There's no need for any paper,
no justification.
Is there?
No.
No need for ticking.
No.
Sounds like they're trying to pinch the pennies to me and just milk you all dry.
Yeah.
Anyway, second question from a HR perspective. What are the potential legal implications of imposing excessive monitoring on an employee with a more than 2 years continuous service?
So we sort of touched on it then about the trust and confidence point being at the heart of the employment relationship. In this instance, if we're putting a measure like this on somebody with no explanation and nobody else is being asked to do it, we've got no justification for it, in the first instance, we're probably going to get a grievance, which inevitably is going to put the employee and line manager head to head. And, you know, if this came to me, the employee's in the right here. You know, if this hasn't been communicated to them, they've just been told to do it. There's no performance issues that have been raised prior to this. We haven't had informal discussions with them about performance. They're not on performance management. Their appraisals have all been good. I've turned the line manager to back down. Because if not, we're going to be finding in favor of the employee on this grievance. However, if we then have a situation where line manager goes, no, I have had several informal conversations with this person.
Right.
It could be this is new line manager who I've had several informal conversations. I don't understand why the last appraisal was so good. This is not a good performing employee. Right. The only explanation I have is that the last line manager wasn't doing appraisals or performance management properly. this is an individual where I've got serious concerns that they're not, their output isn't as good as they are saying that it is. And this was the only tool at my disposal to establish what's going on day to day, because I don't think this person is actually doing what they should be doing.
But with them, like the little manager saying, if for example, they've got a new manager there and they've found all these like discrepancies or whatever, mm-hmm. and they think these appraisals don't reflect the actual performance, mm-hmm. they should be writing all that down now.
They should be. And just because someone's had an informal conversation doesn't mean it shouldn't be written down. We should be taking notes of all these sorts of things. It's why in the system, we have that ability for notes to be taken against mm-hmm. meetings. Because the number of times you feel like you're banging your head against a brick wall when you go into a business where things have got really, really toxic and there's a dispute that's about to kick off, and you say, okay, fine, not a problem. We can help you with this. Just send me the audit trail. Let's have a look at the paper trail and see what's gone on. And they're like, oh, yeah. So it's all been informal so far. Nothing's been written down.
You just spoke about it.
And I'm like, I don't care if it's informal. You still make a note of that conversation. If it's not written down, it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's a pain. Yes, everyone's really busy. But if we don't have written evidence, and it's something that I said for years as a litigator, is documents beat witness evidence in tribunal. People can be bent out of shape by barristers when they're being questioned. Memories fade. These days, you're looking at 2-3 years before you get to tribunal, which means that you could have line managers who've left. They've put all this behind them. They can't remember a 5-minute conversation they had 3.5 years ago with an employee that they can barely remember. If it's not written down, it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. Whereas if we have a document that's dated with a note that was taken at the time, we can say, judge, this happened on this day. They're more likely to accept that than the bad memory of a manager years later.
We have got like naturally quite a limited bandwidth, haven't we, as people?
We have. And where something's difficult, you want to sometimes just put it behind you.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you do have people who leave and people who then won't cooperate and turn up to tribunal, and we don't want to get into the realms of compelling people to attend and hostile witnesses and all that, actually all we need is the documentary evidence of what happened in that meeting. And mm-hmm. we're already, you know, got a strong foot forward.
Write it down.
Exactly.
And there's like AI note takers and stuff now.
Yeah.
And
like, I'd say these days there is no excuse for not having stuff properly written down and not documenting an employee journey, particularly because when it comes to performance management conversations or where we either need to take someone through capability or if we've got someone who wants to go for a promotion, that we can see what their employment history has been like, how they've been doing, if there are any developmental needs, if there's any coaching that we need to give them. We've got all of that evidence rather than sat in a meeting and trying to ask someone to recollect what they did over the last 12 months.
You're asking for trouble, aren't you? Have you had a situation where this is just dreamt up in my head? You know, like in the movies where like the police are interrogating someone and they've got like, right, we're going to go to record now. Bang, mm-hmm. they record. Have you ever had a meeting in a company where they've done that kind of recording? You've been in a meeting, it's been like 3, 2, 1 and they press the button.
I'm not that old.
I don't know.
Well, they were having things on tapes.
People 10, 15 years ago were doing paper stuff. I don't know. You lawyers seem a bit stuck
actually,
in the mud, you know?
Am I that old?
You lawyers, you seem old? To get a hold of technology a little bit later than everyone.
My first dictation machine had a tape in it.
Okay.
So when I used to have to do the dictating with and actually my old...
there you go.
Secretary and PA, Amanda, best support professional in the entire world.
Big ups, Amanda.
Who we ever work. Yeah, because I know she's listened to this because she put a comment on LinkedIn when she was laughing about dictation and me having to explain to you
nice.
That we used to have little tapes that we'd then hand to the secretary who would then type
them up.
Did you
have a machine for it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, you had
man.
The little hand recorder and I remember when they said that they were bringing in the digital ones and it was like, you know, it's all going to go wrong because, you know, what do you do without your little tape? And then it was on a lead and it was connected to the computer then. So it wasn't wireless, but then it was creating an audio file that you could then just send to the pool.
Did you feel like a detective at any point? That's very like Sherlock
Feel
Holmes.
Like a detective.
Yeah, very
no,
Sherlock Holmes.
But it was always really funny because when you had like trainees or paralegals first starting and they'd be like whispering into their dictator because they were so shy and didn't want anyone to hear them.
Blessing.
By the time you've been there like 2 weeks, you didn't care who could overhear you. Like, I've got to just get this done.
Walking around, like, shouting down it.
But yeah, I suppose clients then. Though I was working for a very, very large international corporate firm at the time when you're acting for, like, supermarkets and, you know, that sort of thing. So, yeah, maybe they were using tapes, but we wouldn't really process them. You know, we'd just get transcripts. So maybe I am that old. Maybe they were using tapes and doing the whole, this meeting is now starting. Ka-dunk. Who knows?
I just like the what's the view?
The image of it.
Yeah. Like the it just seems very chic.
Yeah. I mean,
Bugs him alone.
Yeah. I'd say 5-10 years ago, there was much more nervousness around meetings being recorded. So if I took someone into a meeting, said, I'm going to record this meeting. Is that okay? They'd be, why? And it would, you know, immediately you'd think that that's the termination meeting if we're recording it. These days, pretty much every meeting's recorded.
Yeah, you don't blink.
You don't even really question it. I mean, and actually it's not a bad situation to be in. And it's, when I've been coaching managers and HR professionals around this sort of thing, the reluctance from their perspective is if they say something wrong, that it's there and it's in evidence and it's irrefutable. But ultimately, what does that mean? That what, we were going to lie in the minutes and just kind of miss things out? Like, look, if you don't have the confidence, let me coach you. You know, yeah, if you're not sure whether you can say something, don't say it. Like, you know, we don't manipulate meeting minutes afterwards. So if there's a nervousness around recording, I'd rather understand what that's about and let me help you with that.
Some people are just like stage frighty, aren't they? They're a little bit funny.
They are, but once you get going, I've always said to people, you know, when you've got someone in a formal meeting, the safest thing to do is assume that they're recording it. Mm. Just because you're not doesn't mean that they aren't. And we might say, look, we've got a policy against it. It's gross misconduct if you're caught covertly recording, whatever.
And they've got to tell you though.
Yeah, well,
both ways.
It's kind of a double standard here. If you're an employer and you're recording because you're taking personal data from an employee and you're a data processor as a company, you have to tell someone that you're doing it. We can't do it covertly.
Right.
Employees don't have that obligation under GDPR or data protection towards the employer.
Oh, so I could record you?
You could, but then if it's in our policies to say that covert recording at work is an act of gross misconduct,
right, okay,
it'd be a breach of the company policies rather than a breach of the law.
It's a bit dodgy, that.
But the reality is, I mean, tribunal judges don't get that worked up over this when employees do it. So when an employee says, look, judge, I know it was against the policy. I knew I was being dismissed. I knew this manager was going to do things that they were going to like be honest, dishonest about afterwards. It was the only means of protecting myself and to be able to evidence what happened to me. So yes, I admit, I secretly recorded. The judge will go, all right, let's hear it.
Mm.
You know, so it's not... It's not this magic pill that means the employer is going to win a situation because an employee has dishonestly recorded something.
Okay. I didn't know that. That is terribly cross-split, isn't it? Let's do some employee questions now. If additional monitoring is genuinely required, is recording activities in 15-minute increments not excessive? What about 6-minute increments?
Well, yeah, exactly. It'd be like, well, if you don't like 15, I don't know what we can do with that. I do think it's excessive. I mean, look, the situation with this employee, if they are a remote worker and it's difficult to see day to day what they're doing,
mm-hmm.
you know, as an inexperienced line manager, you might be thinking, well, what tools have I got? I can't go and sit with them at home. I can't tell them to leave their Teams on all day so I can watch them through a computer.
God, people still do that.
What, leave their Teams on all day?
Oh, a friend of mine.
No, this can't be a thing.
Who I worked with.
I mean, logged into a meeting, not just like showing your status as green.
As green, I mean green.
Oh, okay. Yeah, oh, green. No, I thought you were suggesting they have to be like, on a video call all day so they can be watched.
Just like visible, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like, that's not really visible, is it? What's visible about that? You're a green dot on Teams.
I can see it sometimes, like, you know, if you've got someone who's taking a couple of hours to respond to Teams messages or they're not, you can see when something's been read, can't you? You get the little eye. But then also you haven't got someone who's just always watching the screen. I do it. Like, I'll get messages from you guys and I'll be like, I'm really sorry, I've just had my head in something.
Mm.
And ordinarily that might be that I'm reading, you know, a judgment might have come down that's materially going to affect something that's going on with a client or perhaps change the way that we do things. And it's 75 pages long and it's full of law. And actually I found an hour, so I'm going to get my head down. I'm going to read it.
And a Teams message can wait, can't it?
Yeah, I'm not. And yeah. If there's things binging in the background, I'm going to ignore them because mm-hmm. I'm focusing on something. So it does happen. You go, sorry, I had my head in something.
Yeah.
You know, how many roles and how many sort of output requirements really require us to answer that quickly? I think there is this expectation because everything is so instantaneous.
Mm.
Like when I was in private practice, if a client emailed me, in some instances, if I didn't reply within an hour, they'd be on the phone. Like, why haven't you responded?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when I first entered practice, people used to write to each other. I'm not helping myself here.
Oh, wow. What's the homing pigeons?
No, post, obviously.
Oh.
I mean, we still used fax then.
I've never used a fax machine.
Have you ever used a fax machine?
No, not to use one.
Fax machine was the core part of the office.
Wow.
And actually, one of my first paralegal jobs was working in a post room.
Oh.
Literally processing post in, post out, stamping, franking,
wow.
You know. But, you know, if I wanted to write to a client with advice, I'd write the letter, print it out. I'd print two copies, one for the file, one for the client. And I would send it in the post. It might take 2 days to get there. They'd read it, digest it, write a letter back. That process would take 2 or 3 days. It would then come in the post. So actually, to go letter and reply, you're looking at over a week.
But you're like not old. Like, why are you still doing that?
This all happened really quick. The tech stuff happened really quickly. Okay.
It was 20 years ago. What are you doing?
Yeah, 20 years ago.
They were torturing you.
It was,
they could have made it easier for you. They put you in hot post rooms on purpose.
I mean, email was there, but it wasn't widely used. And you have to remember, like, if you're talking to a client that wasn't a big corporate, they wouldn't necessarily, they might check their email once every 2 weeks.
It was a big white box in the corner, wasn't it?
Yeah, but you didn't have your email on your phone. No, you'd have to plug your dial-up in, make sure no one was on the phone, dial up to the internet,
yeah, you would.
Wait 15 minutes for your emails to load. Like, it still wasn't like... Oh, you know, like
get
that
off the
sort
phone.
Of thing. Yeah, exactly.
I want to watch YouTube.
And then if you were sending an email and someone did pick up the phone, down goes your internet connection.
Yeah, yeah,
you know?
Wow.
So
I forgot all about that.
At the time, it was still seen easier to write to people or to fax. People would
Patience.
Wait a few days to understand what their legal rights were or what was happening next in a transaction. Whereas now, if someone hasn't got a reply in like 2 minutes,
no patience,
they're hassling you, they're on the phone.
Yeah.
We've got into this culture where everything is instantaneous, everything happens at a million miles an hour. AI doesn't help that mindset either. I think we talked about this on one of the podcasts about AI burnout, where we cannot process the information that we are being given fast enough. It's allowing us to do, you know, 5-10 tasks at once, but we can't take in all that information as quickly as we're being given
and then
process all the other stuff that we're supposed to be doing. So if you are expected to reply to people within minutes, whilst doing other things, no wonder people are burning out. So I will set expectations. Like we're supremely good with our clients. We are extraordinarily responsive. And we're able to do that because of one, how capable the team is, and two, you know, the tech that we use to help us and our efficiency. But if someone's off, if someone's ill, if, you know, we've got something super urgent on, we manage expectations. So it's not that we just ignore the client, because then that's what happens with breakdown of communication, like in this instance. But if someone emails and we go, great, we've picked this up, we can see it's not urgent. If it is, tell us so that we can schedule accordingly. But we'll be back to you on this within 24 hours. That very, very rarely happens. I don't remember the last time we ever took 24 hours to respond to a client
on
something.
No, it's not the case often.
But actually, that channel of communication is more important, I think, so someone understands what's happening and where they're up to. Rather than
out in dark type thing. Yeah. Giving people placeholders is just basic stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
Make them know what to expect. We've got time for one more, I think. If an employment tribunal found that I had been subjected to unlawful discrimination, what compensation would be awarded?
The discrimination one kind of jumps ahead a little bit here, because we don't know why the employee is being singled out. So if the employee is being singled out because of something that's related to a protected characteristic, so say, for example, productivity is dipped because this person is suffering with some sort of condition that means that they meet the definition as being disabled under the Equality Act. And because of that, they're then being asked to do this as an activity. The detriment they're being put to is, one, no one else is being asked to do it. Two, it's additional time load in the day. Three, affects their dignity. Then yes, there could be an Equality Act claim, either for discrimination arising from disability. If we've got a policy of doing this to low performers, it could potentially be indirect discrimination. So there could be some complex legal claims in there. The compensation for discrimination is uncapped. It doesn't mean that it's just an open checkbook. A judge will use their discretion to look at actually what were the injury to feelings and the lasting impact on this person when they make those awards. But it's not unusual in discrimination complaints where people are successful to see compensation in excess of 40, 50 grand. Across the entirety of all the claims that they're bringing. So if this is because somebody has a condition and rather than managing that performance, we're just micromanaging, it could be really expensive for the employer.
Ooh, bit of like unfair treatment and what have you. Closing comments. What measures can HR departments take to prevent these type of things in future?
Train your managers so that they understand what they can and can't do around performance management. We've recently been doing a webcast masterclass series on performance management, so they might want to check that out. It'll end up in our e-learning platform as well. So if people do need to train their managers, there's that ability in there. Reviewing policies and making sure that things around capability are up to date as well. Because even if you've got something like this in your policy, there was an award only this week where you had managers that were applying a capability policy and the judge described it as with tunnel vision. So they were like, the policy says this, so we will do this at all costs without looking at the surrounding context and anything else, yeah, that might influence it. And it ended up with the dismissal being unfair. It's a 45 grand award. So make sure your policies are up to date. Make sure that they are modern. So it's not a capability policy from 15, 20 years ago that it does actually reflect, you know, working styles and arrangements now. And then if we've got an issue where we've got people working flexibly or remote working, making sure, again, the policies are up to date in terms of what we're expecting of people. Mm-hmm. And two, if you're a manager who thinks that you've got someone who isn't doing what they should be doing, escalate it to HR first and take some guidance. Don't be trying to micromanage somebody just because you've got some suspicions that they're not doing what they should be doing. Take some guidance from HR. If we're having informal conversations, asking people what they're doing day to day, saying, look, we've got a bit of concerns about productivity. You know, wait for that narrative to come back and ask somebody what's going on first. Take a note of that conversation before we start implementing measures like this.
It seems to be like this would be wild, like rogue manager behaviour.
It feels like that.
Just to go, this person deserves this. I'm going to ask nobody about it.
They're still out there, those managers, though. Lots of them.
I think my brain went to like diversity and equality training.
Yeah, exactly.
Because this manager's not thinking about
if it
all
is
the eggs.
If there is a protected characteristic here, it could just be someone who, like, you know, it's a bully, in which case we have a course for that as well.
But yeah, that's all for today. Like, comment, subscribe. Cheers.
Until next time, we're your hosts signing off from HRER. Take care of your HR and may your workplace be disaster free. Before we go, a big thank you to you for tuning in, and don't forget to subscribe. If you have your own ER stories or suggestions for future episodes, reach out to us at Heroes or on social media, or even HRER@heroes.co.uk. As we navigate the maze of workplace blunders, remember that no organisation is perfect, but by sharing these stories, we can all work towards creating healthier, happier, and more productive workplaces.